When Paul summarizes how the gospel, as it were, functions, how salvation and redemption sort of work out, if you wish, mechanically in Romans 1-8, he uses the metaphor of the courtroom, and he says that we are, as it were, in the dock and found absolutely guilty, and the witness against us is God. And yet the advocate for the defense, our lawyer, is also God through Jesus, and the judge is also God through Jesus. And on this basis, metaphors break down, I accept that. You can press it all literally. But on this basis, we are not just let off. We are justified and counted righteous because we are in Christ, who never sinned, who never did anything wrong. And so the impression is built up that actually all is on our side. And so at the end of the section, Paul comes to this amazing praise of God's grace, that really and truly we are saved. And we are saved because, although on one hand, out of Christ, we are found absolutely worthy of death, yet we are in Christ and are justified, counted right, counted innocent, because we're in him. And when you look back in the Old Testament, you find this idea played on quite a lot, and also in other places in the New Testament, that God is both the witness and also our advocate, the lawyer who, as it were, stands up in our defense and says, well, I can say this for this person, etc. And yet God is also the prosecution who says, no, he did this, he did that. He's worthy of this, that, and the other, and yet he is also the final judge. I suppose you could say that this is all trying, with the limits, admittedly, of metaphor, this is all trying to sort of show us something of the sort of internal struggle of God to come towards a legitimate, just way of saving sinners. So, let's take Psalm 74, verse 22. Arise, O God, stand up, O God, like a judge stands up to deliver a verdict. Plead your own cause. So, again, plead your own cause. God is, as it were, pleading. He is providing evidence to justify his people, and yet he is also the judge who stands up and gives the verdict. And as we know from 1 John 2, if anyone sin, which is all of us, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ, the righteous. So this lawyer who is on our side, who wants to get us off, is none less than Jesus, and yet he is also, in another sense, our judge. And one comfort I think we do get from all this is that God is the judge, and actually anyone else's judgment of us is meaningless. That's why Paul says, 1 Corinthians 4, that the judgment of him by others is what he calls a very small thing. It's irrelevant compared with Christ's judgment of us. So this simple truth that God, through Jesus, is our judge means that whatever other people think or judge about us is irrelevant, but we all get terribly hurt because he thinks I'm a bad person, she thinks I'm like that, they condemned me, or they don't think I'm fit to whatever, break bread or come to their church or whatever it might be. They don't think I'm good enough. And people allow this to burden them down, when the ultimate reality is that what those people think is neither here nor there. The only judge is them, not the million watching eyes of society all around us. And the more you think about that, the more liberating it is. Another one, Micah 1 verse 2, let the Lord Yahweh be witness against you, the Lord in his holy temple. Behold, Yahweh comes forth out of his place in judgment. So he is the witness against, and he is also the judge who, as it were, comes out of his throne room in judgment to execute the judgment that he himself has decided. He's all things. He's the witness, he's the prosecution, he's the defense. Malachi 3, I will be an alert witness. And then God goes on to talk of how he's going to judge. Another one, Isaiah 3:13, the Lord stands up to plead and also stands up to judge his people. The Lord stands up to plead, that is, to beg the judge for mercy, but he also stands up to judge, like a judge stood up to give the final verdict. So, as I say, I think that you're seeing here an attempt, admittedly within the limitation of metaphor, to show us something of the internal workings of God. Whether we quite get it right or not, the point is, he doesn't just look at us sinners and think, oh yeah, well, okay, wave them through, yeah, turn a blind eye. No, there is no turning of a blind eye. That is to cheapen God's grace, and that is to cheapen God's feelings. Because God is righteous, and he is hurt by sin. Now, the judgment of God is not only going to go on at the last day, it is actually going on right now. Because the purpose of the day of judgment is not for God to gather information and make a decision. That is, I think, to press the metaphor too far. Now, David says in 1 Samuel 24:15, he says, well, he asks that God would judge or give sentence between me and you, he's talking about Saul, and see, or be the witness, and plead my cause, that is, be the advocate. So he asks God to look on the situation with Saul, where Saul is just relentlessly persecuting David, abusing him, slandering him, attacking him. And he asks God to do these three things. Judge, that is, give sentence between me and Saul, and be the witness, and plead my cause, be my advocate, even though God is the judge. So when we go through abuse, and when we go through difficult times in conflict with other people, and who has not lived life without serious conflict with other people, you need to remember this, that God is watching, and God is not mocked. He will not be mocked, as my dear father always used to say, God will not be mocked. And in the end, he is making his judgment right now. It's not as if he sort of lets life trundle on and then sort of takes it all up with people at the last day. It's going on right now. He is the witness, and he pleads the cause of the oppressed, as so many scriptures make clear, and of course, he is the judge. Now, so many times you get this. You've got in Jeremiah 51:36 that God is the one who will both plead our cause and take vengeance. He says that, I will plead your cause and take vengeance for you. So he looked at the situation between Babylon and Judah, his people, and he pleaded their cause, as it were, with himself, and yet he, as the judge, was the one who was going to take vengeance. And the last chapters of Jeremiah speak as if God has got a legal case with Babylon, and he pleads the case of his people in court, and yet he is also the judge. Now, this does not at all mean that God is somehow biased or that it's all a sham or it's all just a play on words. I think this is a valid attempt to putting these scriptures together to help us see how God feels and reacts to our failures and also to our sufferings. And one major theme of the Bible from cover to cover is that God pleads for the underdog. He pleads for the abused, for the rejected, for the sidelined, etc. Don't ever be those who are guilty of the abuse. Don't ever be on the side of the abuser. This is very true in church politics. There's a decision to kick someone out of the church. Don't go along with it, because God will judge that. God will be on the side of the underdog. He will be on the side of the abused and just shrug and say, well, I kept silence because of, I don't know, church unity or whatever myth and mantra that these guys throw up. No, you are, I'm afraid, involved in abuse, and God is pleading, passionately pleading, the cause of the oppressed and the despised and the judged and those who are trodden down and sidelined. This is the sort of God he is. He is the God of the little person, the God of the oppressed, This is the God he clearly reveals himself to be. So don't ever be on the side of the abusers, because look how complex is God's summation and his involvement in all these things. He is the witness. He's the prosecution as well. He's the ultimate judge and decider. And he passionately pleads, as it were, within his own mind, for those who are downtrodden. It's far better to be the downtrodden than to be the abuser.